Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that. My mind is going. I can feel it.
The Full Circle Side Pod, Episode 1, for Friday, May 28, 2010. Hello, world. Where am I? In this episode, Google TV, frozen yogurt, and patent pledge, small print.
Hello, world, and welcome to the Full Circle Side Pod. This is an extra, irregular, short-form show, which is intended to be a side branch of the main Full Circle podcast. Why? We needed somewhere to put all the general technology, non-Ubuntu news and opinions, hobby horses, and general kipple that doesn't fit anywhere else. We didn't plan for it, it just sort of happened. If you want to know what kipple means, hang on till the end of the show. So in this episode, which is, I have to say, an Ubuntu-free zone, the news mainly consists of Google trying to take over the world. Be prepared for a healthy dose of British sarcasm.
Sidepod News.
And the big news of the last few days all came from the Google I/O Developers Conference. And the news largely consisted of Google's plan to take over the world. So we got WebM, the Evo phone, Android 2.2 Froyo, and Google TV. Following the media stream for this event reminded me of when I used to attend these sort of things. Jeez Louise, it was tedious. Okay, it's an event for developers, largely presented by developers. Or at least, developers promoted out of harm's way into management. Unfortunately, it takes a couple of hours of this stilted, cringeworthy corporate joshing to make you appreciate just how good a presenter is Steve Jobs. The crowd only really warmed up when they're all given a free Evo phone. Otherwise, it was tedious. Or just embarrassing. Half the demos at the event failed because there wasn't enough Wi-Fi bandwidth at the venue, and the other half failed because they just weren't that impressive. I'll leave you to pick your own way through the announcements if you go to the Google I/O channel on YouTube, but I warn you, it's a couple of hours of your life you'll never get back. Otherwise, you can check the show notes. You can tell nobody sent me an Evo phone. So of all the announcements at the Developers Conference, we tried not to explode with excitement at the Chrome Web Store. And you have to ask, what took them so long? Yes, they're going to sell various bits of software and possibly music later on as well. The site is live, but there's nothing on the shelves yet. Google is now taking the credit for WebM, which is the open video format, the open source rival to H.264 for HTML5. And yes, there may be some possible legal issues. So this consists of VP8, which is a high-quality video codec, which is being released under a BSD-style royalty-free license. Ogg Vorbis, which is the open-source, broadly implemented audio codec. And Matroska, which is a container format. What's interesting is that we now have a set of format wars. It's like the good old days of VHS versus Betamax. In the red corner, we have Google and the open source community pushing WebM. In the blue corner, we have Apple pushing H.264. And sitting in the green corner trying to decide who they're going to hit first, Microsoft trying to make their mind up which way they want to jump, because they've already said they're going to support both in Internet Explorer 9. Google Wave is now open to everyone, precisely 1 year after it was announced at Google I/O 2009 and failed to set the world on fire. They've now opened the software, which is officially still classed as beta, to Joe Public, so you no longer need to be invited by somebody who's already in the program. And if anybody can tell me precisely what we're going to do with Google Wave as a new piece of collaboration ware, I'm quite happy to broadcast the results. Google's going even further because they've now released Google Wave for apps and some new APIs, which for uninitiated is an applications programming interface. In other words, they're trying to pitch for the corporate market. So move over, Microsoft SharePoint, Google's coming to get you. They also announced Google Storage for developers. They unveiled a cloud storage solution for the development community, which is nice. You boys might want to turn on some encryption for that. After all, you wouldn't want anybody else peeking at your code, now would you? Do we all remember Google Buzz, which also came out late last year? Well, now we have the Google Buzz API. Let me read you something. The Google Buzz API, a member of the Google Code Labs, is very much a work in progress. We intend to continue to iterate out in the open as we go along, and we hope the features we are making available will inspire developers and provide a solid foundation for new applications to be built. And that's a quote from DeWitt Clinton from the Google development team, which I translated as, "Come build something on Buzz, please." Quick straw poll. After the first 2 weeks, has anybody actually stuck with Buzz and still using it? One big announcement was Android 2.2, codenamed Froyo, which I have on very bad authority, stands for frozen yogurt. Or for our American friends, that's yogurt. Is anybody else getting tired of these really silly names for software projects? Just me then. And there's a whole stack of new features for it. The home screen has got tips, widgets, and assistants all over the place because we're all too stupid to figure this stuff out. So you get lots of help on how to configure your home screen with shortcuts and widgets and how to make use of multiple home screens. Do I really need multiple home screens? Applications Launcher and Browser now have dedicated shortcuts, making it easy to access them from any of the 5 home screen panels available. As if I don't have enough trouble trying to navigate my phone as it is. Did I mention I don't really do phones? Android now goes corporate with Exchange support for email, calendars, syncing global address lists, and a host of other features, so we can join the corporate lemmings on open source phones alongside their 7 series Windows mobile series phone 7 mobile thing, or whatever the heck it's called this month. Because it has Exchange, you get a truckload of extra security measures, new password options which Exchange administrators can enforce password policy across devices, and remote wipe, so Exchange administrators can remotely reset the phone to factory defaults to secure data in case the device is lost or stolen. Or, knowing Exchange administrators, they just don't like you. For cameras and galleries, there's a new gesture-based user interface for controlling zoom, flash, white balance, geotagging, focus, exposure, and all video options, which will crank out set video size and quality for YouTube and various other video sharing sites. Under the heading New Platform Technologies comes a media framework, brackets, Stage Fright. Yes, that's its name, I kid you not. This supports local file playback and HTTP progressive streaming. TV on your phone, anybody? Do you need a portable hotspot? Well, Android 2.2 allows certain devices like the Nexus One to be turned into a portable Wi-Fi hotspot that can be shared with up to 8 devices. So if you don't care about your mobile data plan, you too can run up a phone bill bigger than the national debt of Greece. Also in the new features list, apparently, you can use your Android-powered phone as a 3G connection for a Windows or Linux laptop by connecting the phone to the computer with a USB cable. The connection is then shared between the 2 devices. This has been on my Sony Ericsson for the last 3 years. Am I missing something? And of course, frozen yogurt is faster and uses less memory, or at least cleans up after itself once all your applications have crashed. You can tell nobody tried to bribe me with an Evo phone, can't you? And speaking of phones, the Google bribe to the attendees of the conference was to give away to everyone an HTC Evo, the not yet released 4G WiMAX phone with some very impressive specs. It's got a Snapdragon processor and a 800x480 display. It has video calling, a gig of ROM, 512MB of RAM. It's got an 8GB microSD card, an 8MP camera, and a 1.3MP front-facing camera. It's got HDMI out, so you can plug it into the TV, WiMAX, and of course Android. And I'm losing the will to live because at the end of the day, it's another phone. The conference really went into overdrive when they reached the announcement for Google TV. It's a service. No, it's a set-top box for your TV. No, it's both. Plug in the box and you can use your Android phone as a TV remote control. You can also use the box to do web searches on your TV for TV shows that you didn't want to watch in the first place. If you find one, you better hope it's on a channel that you've actually got. But I'm sure Google or one of their partners will be happy to sell it to you. Google TV is coming soon-ish in the fall, or as we say over here, the autumn for those lucky Americans, which means the rest of us will probably get it sometime next year. And I'm wondering who this is really aimed at. Web searches on my TV, really? My mother can't even operate the remote control she's got. The school kids in my club won't sit still long enough to use it, and certainly don't want to use it on the big screen in the living room, or the parents will see them searching for porn. If you've got a big screen TV, the kids want you off it so they can play Xbox. And the last thing you want is micro content for Android phones being blown up from 653 by 932 blurry pixels to 40 or 50 inches. Yes, you can call me an old cynic if you want. And if you don't think this is Google leeching off TV the way it does off print media, ask yourself this. What content are you going to get through this thing? It's mostly going to be long-tail content, otherwise known as repeats of CSI and MTV Cribs. But the Google people really want the developers to go home and build stuff. You know, like apps that they could put in, their app store. It's not all open source yet. They're promising that for 2011. As soon as they've cherry-picked all the good ideas for Google and their partners, the hardware manufacturers, to make a profit on. So the message is for Froyo and the developer tools is that it's all open source. Come be our friends in the Googleverse, developer geeks, and we'll let you make some money eventually. And the overall message of Google I.O.? I found it all a little bit more insidious. Yes, the technology is fantastic. Let's all get excited about all this new stuff we can build. But underneath it all, you can see a strategy where Google wants to control the medium. TV plus Google plus web search for shows. Presumably, all going through the cloud through the Google servers. Not like iTunes at all then. Actually, no. This is the chance for Google to track what you watch, when you watch it, when you pause it, which adverts you'll sit through, and which you'll skip through. You are about to become the most surveilled target demographic of one on the entire planet. Thank you and good night. Please remember to unplug your set from the mains before you go to bed.
Random computer facts. The Apple Lisa, of 1983, was the first successful computer with a graphical user interface, using a mouse. It cost $10,000.
It's just an opinion.
Get real, it's in the patent pledge small print. A story we didn't get round to a couple of episodes ago in the Full Circle podcast concerns the court case between IBM and a small outfit called Turbo Hercules. You may recall a couple of years ago, IBM put about 150 of its software patents under a patent protection pledge, which stated they would not sue anybody for violating their intellectual property under those patents, and this was part of their demonstration of support for the free and open software movement. Turbo Hercules then used some of that patent material to develop a disaster recovery failover solution for IBM mainframe products. IBM hung back on the initial product when it was proposed as a disaster recovery or failover solution. Then various users had a lightbulb moment and wanted to run their ZOS production systems on non-IBM kit, X64 and Itanium, instead of System Z hardware. Clearly, IBM was never going to allow that to happen. Now, I've worked for IBM in the past. I think I understand their business model. You don't buy an IBM mainframe or software, you rent it. ZOS is not sold as Microsoft Windows. You rent it with the hardware. You have per-processor licenses, support licenses, and user licenses, which are all chargeable with the hardware. It's a platform, not a pick-and-mix counter. So no sane individual or court is likely to judge that this was ever within IBM's intention of the patent pledge. Maybe they screwed up by including two out of 150 pledged patents in the infringement letter, but IBM is going to maintain that this wasn't the use case that they had in mind when they pledged those patents. As soon as those customers wanted to hand back their mainframe hardware, IBM was going to go to court. And since it's not a good idea to sue your customers, they were going to sue Turbo Hercules for infringing on their software licenses. Now, lots of outraged commentators and old guard FOSS revolutionaries are getting mightily upset and claiming that IBM has gone back on its patent pledge. Well, clearly this was not the kind of commercial suicide they envisaged when they made that pledge. And I suspect, buried in the small print, it's going to say just that. So will the revolutionaries please stop wasting their indignation and stop making that nasty whining noise? The Turbo Hercules product represents an attack on IBM's core business model, and that's not going to be allowed to stand. So wasting your energy with schoolyard accusations is not only counterproductive, but makes you look like a bunch of kids living in fantasy land. What did you expect IBM was going to do? Play turkey and vote for Christmas? No. Thank you and good night.
Random computer facts. The Commodore 64 retains the record as the most successful single computer model ever, selling over 10 million units from 1982 onward.
Expert Spot.
Editing the Full Circle Podcast. Some time ago, we received a request to talk about how we record and edit the Full Circle Podcast. So here it is. Other podcasters may listen to this and say, you've got to be kidding. I'm not. This is my workflow, not yours. It works for me, and it's still evolving. If you listen to old episodes, there is, believe it or not, an incremental improvement over time. Some are better than others because I had more time to spend on putting it together. It's podcasting, not Blu-ray mastering. Sometimes just good enough is just good enough. Also, I am not an audiophile. I create podcasts that sound okay on headphones and crappy desktop speakers. So what if it sounds lousy on your $10,000 Bang & Olufsen setup? This is not Andre Previn and the Boston Philharmonic. Part 1. Preparation. We maintain a rolling running order from episode to episode. That's our template for the show. Ed and I prep the list of news items with links in the draft running order shared on Google Docs. Dave chips in extra news items, or not, when we get to the recording. Ed and Dave usually agree what games they're reviewing in advance and will often alert each other to new releases in between times. We've got a rolling list of opinion topics which we pick from for next time after each episode is recorded. Depending on what guests and or interviews we've got lined up, or already in the can in the case of the pre-records, we'll drop an item or two into the running order. I then make sure I've got theme and incidental music picked out, drawn from our regular set. I will also sprinkle our idents, the bits the delightful Victoria reads out, and the trailers throughout the show to separate the segments. I hope this gives us a fairly snappy, magazine-style format to the show. Dave sends me the text of his game reviews ahead of time so we know what he's going to say. I'm now posting these as attachments to the podcast on the Full Circle site, so anyone struggling to understand him can read along a Dave. So you might be able to understand when he speaks too fast, but that doesn't necessarily help to understand his jokes. I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do about that. And that's how we prepare the show. Look out for part 2, recording, next time.
Random computer facts. The first ever handheld/palm-top MS-DOS PC was the Portfolio, sold by Atari in 1989.
Feedback. You can post comments and feedback on the podcast page at fullcirclemagazine.org/podcast. Send us a comment to podcast@fullcirclemagazine.org. You can also send us a comment by recording an audio clip of no more than 30 seconds and sending it to the same address. Comments and audio may be edited for length. Please remember, this is a family-friendly show.
And that was the first Full Circle Sidepod. The same rules apply. Send us some feedback by mail or an audio recording and let us know what you think. If you want to contribute an opinion piece or an expert piece, record an OGG file and send it in. It can be about any technology-related topic you want. So this is goodbye for now, and we'll see you on the next one.
Kibble. Any collection of useless objects. Over time, kibble will reproduce itself, if not attended to. This term comes from Chapter 6 of the novel Blade Runner, written by Philip K. Dick, in 1968.